from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll catch up with Jim Walker of Big Car. He's had a busy year.
I'll find out about the Phillips Music Guild programs for grown-ups and young musicians.
And I'll get a taste of what Beef and Boards is doing for the holidays. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Big Car is an arts organization that's just as much about placemaking and community building as it is about making art. And this year, it seems like they've been just about everywhere. Most recently, they were on Monument Circle as a partner with the city in creating Spark. Travis DiNicola caught up with Big Car's director, Jim Walker, to find out about where Big Car has been and where it's going.
Jim, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always good to see you.
Good to see you too, Travis. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You know, I thought about having you in this fall, and I thought, there's no way he would have the time. You guys have been incredibly busy. And let me just say, congratulations on an amazing year for Big Car and the work that you guys are doing in the community. It's hard to know where to start. A lot of people, of course, know the work that that you did with sparking up the Circle, Monument Circle, this fall. You've also moved into new digs at Garfield Park. A lot of other interesting projects going on. Where would you like to start?
Well, I think we're still really excited about Spark. I think that was a great partnership with the city and tons of other partners who participated in what was going on down there. And I think one of the things we're really excited about is what this can mean to future opportunities for this kind of placemaking work to happen.
Yeah. What did you learn from doing Spark? I mean, it was about 2 months, there was essentially, things going on the Circle every single day.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was to try to sort of figure out how to utilize that space, right?
Right. And also, I think it was about how to plan something by doing something instead of just sort of putting it on paper only. So there was already a plan in motion that the city's been working on for a while with the stakeholders. And this was an opportunity to test it out in the real world. And, if you're somewhere for 11 weeks and you're working on a plan, you really get a feel for how it's really going to work. And
sure.
I think it's a great way to do things. And it also was a ground level opportunity to plan. So you're just right down there you're not looking from above on a map. You're actually down there with people and talking to them and trying out things. And
it's a great way to do things.
Yeah.
And, often there's some really great events that take place in the city, but it, more common than not, it's planned ahead of time. As you said, this was sort of planning by doing, which is a very cool approach. So some things that you can share with us that maybe you learned or were surprised by or intrigued by or excited by during that process?
Yeah, I think people love opportunities to do old-fashioned stuff. One of the things that people responded really well to was a partnership we had with the Historical Society to get old postcards of Monument Circle, and then some artists did new ones. And we started having this occasional program at the very beginning, which was you could write a postcard, and then we thought, well, how about we just go ahead and stamp it for people and mail it? And we did it occasionally, and then we started to offer it every day. And we just had, hundreds of postcards going out from Indianapolis all over the world. And so we just, one of the days that was sort of a turning point fairly on was the India Festival was down there, and people loved it. They loved writing postcards to India from Monument Circle. So we just took off with that, and that was a really great opportunity for people to share and send pictures of Monument Circle to Italy and South America and India, all over the place.
Very
and
cool.
Even small towns in Indiana.
Sure.
So that was really exciting. And another kind of parallel to that lo-fi thing that people really loved were guided walks.
I know those were really popular.
Yeah. And we had a huge turnout for the last one was the Ghost Walk, which had like hundreds of people. So that was kind of a logistical challenge.
Yeah, I heard that like 600 people or something showed up to like go underneath the city market.
Yeah, and Craig McCormick led that
walk.
He's
a great guy, and that's pretty wild.
Yeah, so we had other people doing it at other kind of haunted sites around downtown. And people were nice and patient because we just didn't have a mechanism for turning people away, and we didn't want to, so we just worked around that. And then other ones, Bill Selm did a historic or a kind of an architecture and history of German culture in town. That was, people loved that one. And Kip Norman did one that was about oddities downtown, and people loved all of them. And sometimes we had, you know, 20, 25, 30 people, and sometimes there were 80 or, you know, a bunch.
Anything that you thought, oh, this is going to be really cool, and it just didn't quite work out as well, or?
I think that one thing we really learned about it was to do things that people could just stumble upon and they didn't need to be there from the beginning till the end. And so I think music that that you could always have an entry point into was really something that worked best. So, you know, stuff that like street musicians would be doing so that anytime you all walked up, you could enjoy it. And I think, you know, we kind of knew that going into it, but I think we really saw that the situation really lends itself best to being out there and kind of programming on a loop. So people might stop by for a little while and then go on.
So you were seeing, I would think, a lot more people who would just sort of stumble onto what you were doing on the circle. They may be already there or were attracted by the activities. Some people were probably much fewer, fewer who were actually attending for a specific event or something like that.
And people came for the general idea of it. And they also paired it up with other activities. And I think that was one of the things that was really exciting. I had a conversation towards the end with a business owner down there, and he was saying, well, he was getting more business than he typically would when there's a special event down there. So people would come down with the idea of hanging around at Spark, maybe having a seat in the and having a picnic lunch or taking their food outside, and then strolling around and going to a business and maybe going over to the mall. And, you know, so that was, it was part of a combination of activities. So maybe you went and you got a bike from the bike share, and you rode on the cultural trail, or you went down to the canal, you went to a couple of businesses, you had lunch, and it just added to your experience of downtown. And I think that's different than drive down, go just to this, and then get in your car and go back.
Did people know what Spark was, or that it was Big Car that was doing it? Or did that sort of grow the longer that you were there over the 11 weeks? Or
I think that it was, we were really clear in talking about it as a partnership with the city. The city made it all possible. We got the grant together, but they had this their space. And so without the city and without their work on this too, and without them opening the doors to all the stakeholders, and Downtown Indy was another one, just having everybody be accepting of this change, it wouldn't have worked. So we were really, we didn't really try to push our part of it as much as just it was this partnership. And when people ask, well, who's doing this, we would just say it was our arts organization, Big Car, and the city, and then a whole bunch of other partners.
Cool. So is there going to be a Spark 2, or what's the thought on that?
There's a lot of interest in that. So we're working on that idea now and trying to find how we can do that. So, you know, we had a meeting with a lot of the stakeholders, and we've had conversations with a lot of the people who are down there, and everybody's interested in this coming back. And
good.
The feedback was very positive from the participants. We did surveys, and we tracked a number of participants in various opportunities, games, and sitting, and, you know, just hanging out. And the response was very, very positive.
Good. Glad to hear that. Now, most of the time, you didn't actually have to shut down the circle at all. I mean, it was the circle was always was open, and so traffic was still going, plus a lot of pedestrians, and that seemed to work out okay.
Yeah, that's what I would. I mean, if anybody asked me, and we're contributing to the recommendations for the plan, it would be to keep it open for deliveries and drop-offs and some traffic, slower traffic, and then limit that area for driving. It doesn't need to be as much as they have down there in the design originally. And extend it for pedestrians, so and for activities in those spaces. And when you don't close it down all the way, and you have this mixture, it really feels a lot more lively. Mm-hmm. And the parked cars that we had, they were out from the curb. They actually protected the area where activities were happening. So parked cars can be a nice buffer zone, yeah, too. Yeah. So it's the same thing as these bike lanes that the city's putting in down on Pennsylvania, where the parked car is on the outside of the bike lane.
Right, right.
You're protected from moving cars. Mm-hmm. Parked cars are not very dangerous, but mm-hmm. moving cars can be a little more dangerous.
Well, I would often see you guys down there with, it looked almost like a food truck, sort of the big car truck.
Yeah.
That was down there with the Sasquatch or Bigfoot
right.
on top.
That's the Wagon of Wonders.
The Wagon of Wonders. That was awesome.
Yeah, so that thing... it was down there quite a bit, and then that one goes around. That's another new thing for this year. That mm-hmm. goes around to the Reconnecting to Our Waterways project. Mm-hmm. So Alan Gafinski is our row placemaker, and he's on our staff, and that's through a grant through Kresge Foundation gave that to row, and now we're the recipients of that through row.
Okay.
And so Alan's been doing a lot of really cool projects on the waterways. Like he just
nice.
Recently did one that was up at Fall Creek. That was a big leaf jump. Mm-hmm. So the Wagon of Wonders was there, and he had hammocks and beanbags and place to hang out and had a way to make s'mores.
Hmm.
And then he piled up a bunch of leaves, and then kids and adults could just jump in the pile of leaves.
Awesome.
And the Wagon of Wonders is just a perfect thing to have there because it pops up and there's art activities. And
yeah.
Then the other side, the Reconnecting to Our Waterways connection, it's a bait shop that's modeled after West Side Bait and Tackle across
okay.
the White River.
Yeah.
It looks just like it's the same kind of yellow and brown, and it opens up and you can borrow fishing poles, and there are different activities related to fish.
That's
and
very
fishing.
Cool. And how often is that out there?
Alan's been taking it out kind of most weekends. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of weekends he's out and about with it, on the different waterways.
Okay.
And when the weather's decent, it's going to slow down a little bit during the
sure.
winter. And then other times it's at places like Spark, or we take it out in Garfield Park and have it down there.
So speaking of Garfield Park, you guys have moved your main offices pretty recently into a new space. How's that going for you?
We're not completely moved.
Okay.
I mean, still in renovation. We have been doing things in there. We
mm-hmm.
had the 5x5 event in there.
Right, right.
But that was kind of in between two different phases of the renovation. So
okay.
we received a nice, a sizable community development block grant from the city through the federal government to do renovation and purchase the building. So now we're finishing that up. So that whole phase is over, and what's next is really getting it finished up and ready on the inside. So it's good enough to be in,
mm-hmm.
but what we're doing is just finishing up so that it'll be a good program space.
Very cool.
And that should be ready by February. That's the goal.
Okay.
And we have in February, we'll start right off with an exhibit about the poet Mari Evans.
Mm-hmm.
So we're celebrating her life in there and working with her on another piece of this project to have a mural that will be connected, a mural of her, kind of like how there's the one of Kurt Vonnegut,
right.
But have that in the community. And there's a local artist named Michael Jordan who's working on that project with Chate Marsh, who's
mm-hmm.
kind of curating the show and working
okay.
with Mari.
Cool.
So that'll be, yeah. So that building is coming along. It's
mm-hmm.
great. We did work with Lily Day of Service to do a mural
mm-hmm.
on it that Nat Russell came up with the design. He's another local artist. And it's going to be a really great place for us to be. And it's our workshop. So we did build all the stuff for Spark in there. But it's getting the public programming like we did at Service Center. Is the last sort of the next
right. Service Center, of course, the old location that you guys had out on 38th Street, which was a great space, but you had to move. And,
right.
And, but you definitely utilized that space well while you were there.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, Jim, I mean, we've known each other a long time, and you're this community organizer. You put together great events and have really creative ideas. But what's really impressive about what Big Car has done lately has been the way it's been able to grow through all these partnerships with city funding, with federal funding. Is that you, or do you have other people that are helping you do that? Or how are you managing this sort of growth? Because the organization's gotten pretty huge.
Yeah, I mean, we have several full-time people.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has a different important role that they play. So it's a lot of us. It's a team effort for sure. And we have a really great board. So we're a nonprofit organization. So we have a board. And that board has really developed over the years, too, as we went from being a volunteer organization,
mm-hmm.
just us volunteering to run it,
yeah.
to being a professional organization with staff. You know, a lot of it is also that we adapted to what we were learning, and we also adapted to the situation. We came in during the recession, basically. Mm-hmm. That's when we started. You know, we started in 2004, and we really got rolling in 2006, 2007, and that's right in the middle of that. So we had to be, you know, very creative, and we also weren't locked into a program model that we couldn't adjust when the recession came.
Sure.
So we really were able to look at what the needs were and what our talents were that could kind of match up with those needs. And so we...
And scale it up or scale it down appropriately.
Right. And so we were able to match up and learn about a lot of things along the way by doing a lot of, you know, we traveled a lot, participated in conferences, did a lot of studying and learning, and connected with a lot of great people who came into the mix and brought their talents and their abilities.
So what else are you excited about that you have done this year? I mean, TEDx was back. That was awesome.
Yeah.
But so many other projects you guys seem to always be connected to.
Well, I think that the one of the things that kind of connects a lot of this stuff is the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a forgotten area sometimes. Or it has been over the years. And, you know, we started in Fountain Square.
Yeah.
And Chate and I live in Garfield Park. So we've been really interested in supporting that area and highlighting some of the great things about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the University of Indianapolis is another one of those great things. So it was great to have the TEDx down there. And they were a great partner, and it worked out really well. And we're seeing a lot of energy connecting the university to Garfield Park and to Fountain Square. So that was a real highlight. And you know, the work we talked about a second ago with Roe, is another one, and that has a bit of its focus. You know, one part of its focus down there, Pleasant Run, which is a great connection between the Cultural Trail and Garfield Park, and eventually that'll help connect Fountain Square to Uindy.
Yeah.
You know, having that whole section down there. So, you know, we're really excited about that, and the neighborhood down there has been very supportive of us, and. It's great to be working from within your own area and then sort of expanding that out to other places and being able to be based there, but we'll also work everywhere else.
Right. And like I said, living there is a bonus for you, which is great. So what do you got exciting coming up?
I think the biggest thing that we have coming up now is we're going to take it easy for a couple weeks. Hopefully.
You've earned it. Yeah.
But then getting that building ready,
mm-hmm.
and then starting up in February with the Mari show.
Sure.
And then really one of the things that we're really excited about is connecting Fountain Square to Garfield Park and figuring out how to make to work in the neighborhood and have it be an experience where you go down there to our building, but there are things to do all around the neighborhood. And how can we really be outwardly oriented in how we work in that space? So there's another building that we own right down there, too, that's called Listen Here, and that's our sound art project. And actually, one of the components of that facility is having a low-power FM radio station.
Hmm, okay.
So that's another thing we're working on for next year is getting that together. It'll have a 3 or 4 mile radius.
Yeah.
So it'll mostly serve the southeast area.
Okay.
And we'll be broadcasting out of that area, too. And we were thinking of it as sort of an art and community-focused radio station that is kind of like an access station.
Very cool. So, yeah, when you said, you know, connecting Garfield Park to Fountain Square, I'm thinking, okay, do you do that through trails? Do you do that through businesses? The last thing I was thinking was you do it through the airwaves.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the airwaves are great, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think it's a great way to get people involved. And even if, you know, in a station like that, you know, you see with these community stations, there's a great one in Bloomington.
Mm-hmm.
And in other cities, a lot of what it's about is getting people together to do the project of making the show. And then you create this social structure of all the people who are coming in and out of the station and working on this stuff, teaming up, communicating, and sharing. And, you know, you never know if somebody's going to be listening and it's going to spark something, too. So we just thought it was a great and we just – reached out into this. There was like an opportunity to get a license, and we were like, okay, let's try it. And then we ended up getting one. And so now we're in the midst of getting the final things like the tower stuff figured out and all the transmitter in the tower. And it'll just be a nice mixture, and it'll be in a place that is built around sound art and music. Okay. And you know, another opportunity for great partnerships with people who other organizations that work in that kind of stuff.
Very cool. That sounds awesome. Jim, I love how you and Big Car just approach things like, yeah, let's give it a try. See if it works.
Right.
Once again, just great stuff that you have achieved over the past year, and looking forward to what Big Car brings us in the next year. Thanks a lot for coming into Art of the Matter today. It's great to catch up with you.
Thank you, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with Jim Walker, director of Big Car. For more information, visit bigcar.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The mission of the Phillips Music Guild is to serve talented Central Indiana school-age instrumental music students through volunteer adult mentoring, using a variety of musical styles, and tuition-free ensembles to develop a lifelong passion for the joy of music performance and enriching their lives by building upon and broadening their school experience. Sharon Gamble invited organizer Lee Jones to tell us more about this organization and its many outreach and mentoring programs.
How did you get involved with Phillips Music Guild?
The same way most everybody who was involved with the guild got involved.
Didn't say no, did you?
That's not nearly enough. Bob Phillips was a very dynamic music personality. You can't have been in Indianapolis for any time at all before you start hearing Bob Phillips stories.
Yeah.
I heard another new one over the weekend.
For people who might be new or outside of the music realm, tell us about him.
Bob Phillips was a chemist by trade. He held part of the patents on margarine and Gatorade.
Oh, my gosh.
Worked for Dow Chemical.
Mm-hmm.
He had a genius for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
More than that, he was the kind of person that had to express his opinion about something. Part of that was music. He grew up in Chicago.
Oh. Surrounded by music.
Down the street from Ernest Hemingway.
Wow.
And graduated from Purdue and was hired here, came here to work for Lilly's. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but got involved in them telling him what he could do and what he couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, bye. Went across the street to Dow Chemical.
That's a bold move.
He was a bachelor all his life.
Mm-hmm.
And spent his whole life helping kids because he really got involved. His house was the former Vonnegut family carriage house.
Uh-huh.
Which was perfect for him because his upstairs was a haymow, which has to be specially reinforced to take extra weight.
Mm-hmm.
So by putting a music library up there, it didn't hurt a thing. So he had a huge library.
Did he play an instrument himself?
He was a string bass player.
Okay.
He played piano as well. Most of what he did through his midlife was run a dance band, which was big money at that time.
Yeah.
So he supported himself that way. So consequently, all of the money from Dow Chemical went into music.
Hmm.
And the Indianapolis Symphonic Band still has his library. It's a huge job cataloging it and keeping it in order. But music for small chamber groups, which played in his front room many times, and dance band and concert band,
mm-hmm.
Plus some things that are very esoteric as well.
Hmm.
He just had a very inquiring mind. I am by trade a harness maker.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe. That doesn't seem like quite a good combination. But I have several things that he showed me that I didn't know about because he knew he had the background to do it.
Hmm.
one of these days I'll have to replace some of that.
Do we know how he went from being interested in helping kids get music instruction to actually forming an enterprise?
When he moved to Indianapolis from Chicago, he taught music to many kids, mm-hmm. And discovered there was no place for them to play. The music scene in Indianapolis was not very robust at that point.
This was, to help us, 50s?
Early 50s.
Early 50s, okay.
Maybe even late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay, I'll found something. So he founded the Indianapolis Symphonic Band, and they played all sorts of places that are well known now.
Mm-hmm.
The former Unitarian Church down on Alabama, which has just recently been sold.
Mm-hmm.
Church at 52nd and Central, Tabernacle Presbyterian Church, all those places. Most recently was the big Methodist church at 38th and Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
And so he developed relationships there.
Mm-hmm. That was really smart, because then there were built-in audiences as well.
That's right. There are many of us in music today, including professionals and amateurs and total amateurs, that would get a call some Saturday afternoon. We're playing at such and such a church tomorrow morning. Be there at 9 o'clock. Have your white shirt on. and just go ahead and play it.
Well, that's good for your sight reading skills, isn't it? Holy moly.
You either do it or you don't.
Yeah. How did you get roped in, introduced, and what's your instrument?
Theoretically, my instrument is oboe. I'm principal oboe in the Philharmonic Orchestra of Indianapolis and have been since 1963.
Explain the theoretically.
Well, I also play all the clarinets and all the saxophones.
I see.
I don't, as you mentioned earlier, I don't have a very good off button. I don't know how to say no. really interesting situation. About 2 weeks ago, there was an Indianapolis landmark called the Bassoon Monsoon, which is 35 to 50 bassoonists all playing together.
Wow.
It's a pretty awesome sound.
Yeah. Where does such a thing happen?
This was at Martin Marion University.
Huh.
Because of the help from their music department.
Mm-hmm.
We are fortunate enough to have several really good bassoon repairmen in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Coming from Jim Lasley, who
mm-hmm.
was a good friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
Who died just a few years back. Paul Nordby has taken over his business. It does not seem like a standard instrument repairman can deal with the complexities of a bassoon without having a heart attack. So Paul has continued to sponsor this. Jim Lasley sponsored it before.
Mm-hmm.
We have some great players from all over the Midwest and all over the country come in and give clinics and classes. And then we play quartets and trios and then get together as a bassoon band of 35 or more. You haven't lived until you've heard Monty Python's theme played by 35 bassoons and 4 contras.
I'm going to make sure you let us know the date so we can publicize that on the Art of the Matter next year.
There's another one.
Yeah.
Also, that Butler University has just started up recently.
Uh-huh.
Their bassoon professor, Doug Spaniel,
mm-hmm.
is very well known in the industry. And the new oboe teacher has just taken over with him. So they're doing a double reed day. So we'll have lots of bassoonists and lots of double reed. I haven't decided yet what I'm going to play.
But. It's nice to have choices, isn't it?
Right.
So Phillips Music Guild, you know, your website has all these amazing different programs from little kids beginning instrumentalists to grown-ups to side-by-side playing. The biggest request you get, or what program do people most want to take part in?
Our big emphasis is middle to early high school students,
mm-hmm.
students that have started already on their instrument and have gotten discouraged because music in public schools is not really very exciting right now. There's a lot of good teachers out there. There's a lot of good programs out there. But there's not enough of them.
Yeah, are they stretched pretty thin then?
Very thin.
So kids can't get the kind of individual attention they need.
Right. What we do, we don't attempt to have professional teaching things. We sit next to them,
mm-hmm.
and they get the input by osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really make huge mistakes if you have somebody sitting next to you playing it correctly. So that's where we try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We have 25 to 35 mentors that sit in with the kids as needed. We're in the process of doing side-by-side with the Metropolitan Youth Orchestra, which is a similar program involved with only strings.
That's coming up in January, is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
So they've picked really hard music, a movement of a Beethoven symphony and some Aaron Copland. And,
wow.
We said, okay, we'll tackle that. It's pretty hard music. But we had our first rehearsal with them a week ago, last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And it went pretty well. So this is the kind of thing that I think we can help with.
Mm-hmm.
It would be pretty tough to ask any high school or middle school program to offer the wind section for a symphony orchestra without really getting into overkill.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hard music written for symphony orchestras and for bands and for chamber groups and for everything else.
Are a lot of the kids you're working with getting their primary instruction through the school and maybe not through private teaching?
That's correct.
Okay. Oh, so this really does fill a huge gap there.
Right. As good-hearted as all the Indianapolis Public School music teachers are, and competent and working themselves to death, it's pretty tough in the course of a school day to give you a full range of music. What we're trying to do is add to that. We don't want to replace it at all,
mm-hmm.
because there has to be public school music, I think. But to add to it and say, okay, yeah, but you can do this too. If you just put this finger down in this particular spot,
mm-hmm.
it's very helpful because they can see somebody doing it and hear somebody doing it. Obviously, it makes it very, very much easier for them rather than having to try to play something correctly when the person next to you is not playing it correctly.
Mm-hmm. And you're also, in addition to providing some very explicit music instruction, you're just by being a positive adult presence, you're mentoring.
That's exactly.
That's a secret we won't. If you have young people listening to this, close their ears.
it's not considered one of those good things, although our new head of IPS is getting into mentoring for reading.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very good idea. Because as we tell the mentors as they come in, no matter how funky you think you are as a player, you're better than the kids. There are things that you can show them that you know, that you were taught, that you can be the expert. And so we have people that are really very good players as mentors. We have some people that are not.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit to the students is just huge.
Sharon Gamble with Lee Jones, one of the organizers of Phillips Music Guild. You can learn more about the efforts of the 65-year-old organization, get involved in its programs, by visiting PhillipsMusicGuild.org. Again, PhillipsMusicGuild.org. Sharon.
Hey, Travis, I think all the leftover turkey has been used up now.
You think? You sure? You sure you got all the leftover? Nice. There's still a little bit left. There, okay.
Wait, that's the tetrazzini.
Oh,
but
goodness.
We have nothing left over. We have all sorts of fresh new things for you to do on our calendar that we call
What do we do?
Turkey-free edition.
Turkey-free. So many good things for the holidays. Turkey-free. Douglas David. He's not a turkey. No, he's a great artist. And art is a great thing to buy.
I don't think he's ever painted turkeys.
I don't know that he has.
We challenge you, sir. Paint some turkeys.
Paints beautiful flowers and cows.
And cows, yeah.
Maybe does turkeys. He's doing a holiday studio show on Friday the 4th from 5 to 8. His studio is also going to be open on Saturday the 5th and then pretty much every weekend from now through New Year's. And you can get more information at douglasdavid.com. But his studio is up on North Keystone Avenue. And, of course, local art makes great gifts.
I was just about to say that. Dear listeners, do you know how much Travis and I both like paintings by local painters?
There's
one chance. Another coming up this Friday. You heard about this on the Art of the Matter a few weeks ago. The Stutz Artists Holiday Show. It's a little bit like a mini version of the spring open house. A lot of affordable art. And don't forget, you can always commission an artist, so you could, they would make you a gift certificate if you were of a mind.
I'm sure
also
a pretty one.
Also the Indiana Plein Air Painters Association is having its first Friday show this Friday at Indiana Landmark Center. Again, lots of affordable, beautiful artwork to look at and buy. And we won't tell anybody if you buy it for yourself.
Or for us.
Or for us.
You said mini, which makes me think of Tiny, because Tiny for yet another big show opens this Friday, and that's at the 924 Gallery that the Arts Council runs. And what's really fun about Tiny, and this is Tiny 4, is that all the work there for the show is 6 inches by 6 inches by 6 inches or smaller. So it's all tiny art, which means tinier prices, too. So some really fun work if you're looking for some great stocking stuffers.
Now, maybe your gift is more of a performing arts variety and you would like to take somebody to hear something Christmassy. Well, here's an opportunity. The Indianapolis Symphonic Choir is doing performances with Sylvia McNair as part of their Festival of Carols at the Scottish Rite and the Palladium. Dates vary. You can check that out online.
Well, I know there's somebody out there who's thinking, what do I get for my grandfather or maybe your dad or maybe for yourself this Christmas? Well, you know what? I think some tickets to see Sophia Loren at the Palladium.
Oh, wow.
Sounds kind of awesome because she's going to be there in March. But you could get tickets now to be a part of an evening with Sophia Loren. There's also a VIP once-in-a-lifetime experience to actually meet her as well. What a great Christmas gift that would be. Sounds kind of awesome to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Very fun.
If the somebody on your gift list likes gospel music, think about December 14th at Latitude 360, taking that person to Owl Music Group's Gospel Jazz Experience. It's a new show and should be very high energy. That's December 14th at Latitude 360, Owl Music Group's Gospel Jazz Experience.
I know the semester is wrapping up, but there's a lot going on at Butler University the next couple weeks, including Butler Ballet's The Nutcracker, which is running this weekend, the 3rd through the 6th, at Clues Memorial Hall, and features some great dancers and, of course, great music. All the choreographies from the Butler Dance faculty and the music from the Butler Symphony Orchestra and the Indianapolis Children's Choir and dancers from the students of Butler and children from all across the city. Always a lot of fun. But also, a little bit later in the month, on December 13th, may your December 13th be merry and bright, when the Butler University Choirs and Symphonic Wind Ensemble join together for concerts. Merry and Bright Holiday Music, and that is on Sunday, December 13th at the Schrott Center. And they've got two concerts at 3 and 7, and tickets are required, but admission is free for that. So lots of good things going on at Butler.
If you want an outing to get you in the mood and maybe inspire you in your decor, think about going to Christmas at Lily House at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. As you may or may not know, they decorate that with a fresh theme every year, and there's always something to admire and maybe something to emulate in your own decor. Also, think about the gift shops at the IMA as source for gifts for people on your list.
And, of course, you can learn more about all the holiday events going on with the local arts events calendar at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis' Arts Guide website, or just listen to us next weekend on the calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
For 23 years, Beef and Boards Dinner Theater on Indianapolis' North Side has been presenting its annual A Beef and Boards Christmas. Travis DiNicola spoke with Beef and Boards' Eddie Curry to find out more about this holiday tradition.
Eddie, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thanks, Travis. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you, and happy holidays.
You too.
So, Beef and Boards Christmas, always a good time. 23rd year, which is kind of crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah, an annual thing, and a lot of people in Indianapolis and families and whatnot have made it an annual gathering for them.
It is a tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah, always fun. Always, you know, some things to expect, some things that are new, of course, in keeping with the show. Tell me a bit about this year's show.
Well, in keeping with the tradition of the last 22 productions of the Beef and Boards Christmas Show, it's a review type show.
Mm-hmm.
Features all of your favorite Christmas songs. Kind of in the tradition of some of the old 70s shows.
Yeah, like a variety
shows.
Show.
Exactly,
type thing.
A variety mm-hmm. show. So there are dancing girls and mm-hmm. A quartet of singers, and Santa Claus makes an appearance.
Of course.
And it doesn't take itself too seriously, but toward the end of the show, there is a nice moment to give tribute to the members of the armed services.
Okay.
And then, of course, we have our own little version of the nativity story.
Excellent. And since it is Beef and Boards, the beef or the food is part of it as well.
Yeah, and it's a special buffet during the holiday season. Yeah. Chef Odell Ward and his staff there in the kitchen prepare a bit more of a holiday buffet with all the trimmings, turkey and the roast beef, of course, because that's the beef part of the of the name of the theater, and it's one of my favorite buffets of the year.
Yeah, that's nice that they do something a little special for the holidays, of course. And this is great. I mean, it runs through the 23rd, so right up until Christmas Eve. Lots of performances during the week, weekends, matinees, Sundays, Saturdays, and so on. So lots of different times for people to go see it. Really, it's a great family show, great family outing.
Yeah, and there are different sections of the show that cover different genres of music. Mm-hmm. And there is, of course, quite a bit of music interspersed throughout, geared toward the kids.
Yeah.
Rudolph makes an appearance, and Frosty the Snowman. But it isn't just geared toward the young kids. It is fully rounded for the entire family with some really strong talent. Kendra Lynn Lucas is returning this year, and mm-hmm. she is kind of our big belter, and she goes to church on all of those Christmas songs that she performs, and then of course the dancing girls in the show for the dads out there. So there is a little something in it for everybody.
And of course, you've got your hosts, Kenny Shepherd and Deb Wims.
You know, I think
job.
Kenny Shepherd has been in all but maybe 2 years of
really? That's
our
so cool.
run of Christmas shows. He's yeah. well into over 20. And Deb has been there right beside him for a majority of those. I know she took off a couple of years when she and her husband had their sons. But there is a lot of familiarity about the show. But as mm-hmm. you pointed out, there's a little something different in the show each year as well to keep it fresh. But it's always nice to see Kenny and Deb on our stage together.
Well, they do
the
a Christmas waltz, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. beautiful, beautiful mm-hmm. number in the show, choreographed and directed this year by Ron Morgan,
okay.
who was on Broadway back in the 90s. He did a production of Lloyd Webber's Starlight Express and also Mimi in St. Louis. And he has a dance studio in Carmel called Performer's Edge, and he is directing and choreographing the show this year.
Now, Eddie, how long have you been involved with Beef and Boards? And
this is my 27th consecutive year of being involved in some way. In the early years, you know, I would do a show or two each season, but I joined the staff in 1994, so I've been at Beef and Boards for quite a while. Ironically, I've only been in the Christmas show once.
And, I was wondering about that.
Well, I think they decided maybe that that wasn't such a good idea, and I haven't been invited back to that show. But I did direct it a number of years, too. It's a fun time to be around. We do a second show during the holidays as well, our one-hour matinee version of Christmas Carol.
Yeah, tell me a bit about that. Yeah.
I'm often involved with that one, and it's on stage when the main stage show isn't, so two performances on Monday and then a matinee performance on Tuesday and Friday. And it's only an hour long, but it also features Beef and Board's holiday buffet prepared by Chef Odell Ward. And this year, I have the honor of playing Scrooge. So we have what I call the varsity show and the JV show, and so I'm the starting guard on the JV,
show. I didn't realize you guys were doing Christmas Carol. That's cool.
Yeah,
that's nice little shorter show, and but still have the food available.
Yeah, and this is the 21st annual production of that show as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I can see you as a good Scrooge.
You know, bah, humbug.
Of course. So what for you it makes this such a special event each holiday season?
Well, just from the moment you pull up to the theater and to see the canopy in front of the building decorated with the Christmas lights, and then we always have a family that works with us at the theater. They decorate our lobby with just beautiful Christmas trees. And then the moment you walk into the room, those Christmas decorations go on around what is kind of a horseshoe shape. Of the room that Beef and Boards is. So there's that. But, you know, we start listening to Christmas music at Beef and Boards in July. And to see those dreams of the holiday season realized once the cast arrives for rehearsal and the sound of the season is echoing through the building, it just ushers in a truly special feel to the holiday season. And it's something that we all look forward to every year, bringing our own Northwest Side Christmas card to our Beef and Boards family of audience members.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, as I said, it runs through the 23rd. Can you give us a little preview of what Beef and Boards has on deck after that?
Our 2016 season will begin a little before 2016 with the comedy Run for Your Wife. And that will also be the show that is on stage for our big New Year's
for
Eve
New Year's, sure.
Evening, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, people will have to start planning for that now,
dancing
too.
And breakfast after dancing. So a ticket that night gets you party favors and a bottle of champagne. It's a fun night at the theater. And with that comedy, Run for Your Wife. Then for the first time on the Beef and Board stage will be our production of Sister Act.
Oh,
and we
cool.
just completed casting for
nice.
That show, and it is a
very
really
fun show.
Just a fun show with a lot of talent in it. That'll be followed by Guys and Dolls.
Okay.
And then we'll kick off the beginning of the summer with the return of the Church Basement Ladies, the original story that introduced these Lutheran gals to our audience. Right after that will be, I think maybe I got that confused. Beauty and the Beast is after Guys and Dolls, and that's our family show. And kids 3 to 15 get in.
Sounds
for
$10 like a great upcoming
off.
Season.
Yeah, it is.
No, the one show you mentioned, the which you're going to be doing for New Year's as well as in January, Run for Your Wife. I'm not familiar with that one.
It is a play, a British farce, and it's about a fella who I'll be playing who is a taxi driver, and he is involved in a little fender bender and bumps his head, and they take him home. But unfortunately for him, they take him to the wrong home on the wrong day.
Okay.
And he has a wife on the West End and a wife on the East End. And he's in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so the two lives start to clash together, mm-hmm. and it's him, and the set is split between one side is Mary's house, and the other side is the other girl's house, mm-hmm. and it's a bunch of doors slamming and opening, and misidentity, and all of the fun stuff.
Very fun, makes farcical.
Up a farce. Yes, yeah, nice. Very funny show.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it sounds like some good stuff coming up,
and also Into the Woods next fall.
We're
very excited about that. First
excellent.
Time we've That'll ever cool. done a Sondheim piece, and anybody that's who does musical theater loves
right.
Sondheim.
Sure, that's a big one. People love performing that and seeing
oh,
that.
Yeah.
That'll be excellent. Well, again, Beef and Boards Christmas going on right now, 23rd year. Very cool, sponsored by WHMB-TV40. It's going on through December 23rd. Eddie, thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for everything that you guys here at Art of the Matter do for the arts community in Indianapolis, especially the theaters. You're very much appreciated, and I wanted you to know that.
Thank you very much.
Travis DiNicola with Beef and Boards, Eddie Curry. The Beef and Boards Christmas runs through December 23rd with performances every day. You can get the full schedule at, you guessed it, beefandboards.com, beefandboards.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll find out about the Eitelsburg Contemporary Arts Fellowships.
And I'll see what the State Museum has planned for the holidays. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What do we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.